Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
Yeah, I'm Andrew Horowitz.
You are, yes.
I am.
I understand that. And it's almost, it is the end of the month. We lost a whole month again.
Did you check, did you do something with your settings with Curry or something? Because you're coming in very bold.
Oh, I can turn it down.
Just ever so slightly, just a hair.
Okay, I'm turning it down a hair.
Just a hair.
Wait, I got to pull a hair off my head first. Okay, there we go. Okay.
Better? Okay.
Is that better?
I think so.
Well, we'll find out as we go along.
Sure will.
It actually shows me undermodulated.
Well, you can pump it up a little bit if you want. I'll fix it on the other side.
Okay.
Anyway, I was in New York this week. Have you been traveling at all? I feel like I've been traveling so much and you're not going anywhere.
Well, in a manner of speaking, I'm not. I haven't been anywhere since the Los Angeles meetup, really.
Oh, and when was that?
Yeah, I don't know. There's no reason to travel. It's still, although the weather's improved, I might go somewhere now.
Hmm. Well, I was in Montauk, New York, in New York City, Manhattan this week. The last weekend, I should say. And I had the best jelly donut ever.
How can there even be a best jelly donut?
I don't know. It's just super sweet and it's delicious and it's just great. I put a picture on the show notes for you.
Oh, I'm looking over here. It just says jelly.
Jelly.
Let's see what this donut looks like.
It's a good looking jelly donut.
Oh, yeah. It looks pretty good.
Oh, it's delicious. I had two of them. It was disgusting.
Must have been very fresh.
It was very fresh. They make it, obviously, with a lot of, I guess, I don't know what they make. A lot of sugar, a lot of jelly, a lot of, it's like a raspberry flavored. I love that.
Oh, delicious. Good.
Well, let me tell you, Montauk was great, by the way. It was quite the scene out
Why?
There. It's kind of like the Hamptons these days on steroids.
Really?
Yeah. They've gotten kind of way out there. It used to be a sleepy little fishing town when I was a kid. And then I guess because of some of these shows on TV and there's a series called The Affair, it really got people excited about going out that way. And now some of the
Sounds like an investment we overlooked.
No, overlooked. I was there as a kid and some of the houses that I know of from when I was a kid are selling for like $6 million now.
Wow.
Yep, exactly. So missed that boat. So to speak. But I spent the afternoon out there, took the train out there. It was a 3-hour ride by train. And I at about 5 o'clock, I'm all ready to party. And then I say, you know what? Let me just find out when the last train back is. I thought it was like midnight. Nope. Yeah. 7:30.
Yeah. It kind of puts a crimp in things.
Oh, it was horrible. Let me tell you what's going on with the markets. We had that bad week last week. Markets were down the week before, I should say. And just out of nowhere, snap your fingers and the market snapped back like there was a giant sale going on. They had multiple days up in a row. I think it was 7 days up in a row for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ and the S&P hit all-time highs once again.
Yeah, I noticed. Every time I see this, I'm thinking plunge protection.
Oh, back to that again, huh? The plunge protection team.
I'm totally freaked about this group.
But it wasn't even a plunge.
I re-listened to the lecture from that Edelman guy, and it's very interesting.
Well, what do you make of it? I mean, what are you saying that you do believe this is true?
Yeah, I believe it's true.
And what's their purpose? I mean, besides the fact of saving the markets from the abyss in the event it happens, but we're at all-time highs here.
Yeah, it's a good time to short.
But if the plunge,
it's not a good time to short if it goes up another 1,000 points.
The problem is that if there is a plunge protection team, why would you short?
You wouldn't.
Oh,
but the plunge protection team, I think it can only deal with these kind of pedestrian movements. A serious crash where the rug was pulled out from under the rug was pulled out from under the market. I think it would be impossible to stop and they just throw a bunch of money away and make it worse.
Well, I mean, they've been putting money in. They must put it, if they are this plunge protection team, they must put money in. And maybe that's when the market crashes, when they take money out to put it back in the coffers so that when they're ready for the next time, kind of get refired, ready to go.
We'll see.
Mm. Well, on the NASDAQ, we saw a 2% gain last week, 1.43% for the S&P 500, 132, 1.32% for the Dow Jones. Dow settled at just over 21,000 last Friday. S&P at 2415, NASDAQ 6212. And again, historic levels last Friday. Dropped a little bit today. Monday was a holiday, of course. And the NASDAQ 100 is now up a whopping 19.01% year to date.
Yeah, that's too high.
Why do you say that?
There's no one. The economy's not in that kind of condition.
Well, these companies have done an amazing job at cutting costs and increasing their margins and doing the whole sorts of things related to their earnings, buybacks, et cetera. I mean, just look at some of the top names in the universe of the NASDAQ 100, the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons, the Netflix. I mean, they're rocking.
Yeah, they are rocking. There's no doubt about that. Don't come a-knocking.
Now, the small caps, on the other hand, are still lagging. They were down 70 basis points today when the market was flat, which tells you that what's happening, once again, we've talked about this, though, but that the large guys are just pulling everything back up. They're holding everything. And the interesting thing there is that, and we've talked about this too, but I'll just restate the facts, that this passive investing foray, where a lot of people are putting money into these ETFs and just saying, let's buy the S&P 500. As they put money in the S&P 500, as they put money into the NASDAQ 100, the big caps, it's just basically putting most of their money, or a large chunk of it, right into these names. And that's what's helping to push these things back up. As a matter of fact, Amazon, for a brief moment today, was over $1,000 a share. I remember back when, was it Alan Abelson in Barron's? Remember that writer?
Oh, yeah.
A brilliant, brilliant wordsmith. One of the best writers I remember in years, was so down on Amazon. This guy was, week in and week out, he'd find a way to weave in a slam on Amazon throughout his writings, no matter what was going on. This company's going out of business, terrible company. You know, who wants to buy books online, et cetera? Now, maybe he was right about the book part of it, but obviously they morphed it into something much bigger and much different. I was in New York, and I happened to be walking down a street, and I get to a corner, and there's all these trucks there. And out of the trucks, all these boxes, a lot of boxes coming out onto these wagons. And then people were just taking them and walking away with them, looking to deliver them. It was an Amazon-like corner. It was just loads and loads of Amazon boxes coming out of these trucks. Which you would expect, I guess, in New York, right? A lot of people are getting...
You see it everywhere.
I mean, this was a lot of boxes. So... again, the large caps are driving it higher again. I mean, if there is a kink somehow that people decide they want to start taking money out of these large caps, that's when the market's going to cave.
Well, if the small caps aren't reacting, and let's add another dimension to the small caps inactivity, which is the plunge protection program. They don't do anything with the small cap stocks. They don't care.
This is the big ones, the big names, the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ, or the NASDAQ large guys. Is that written in their edict somewhere?
No, I think that's the way it was explained, though. And why would they? They want something that's going to affect the Dow Jones, these averages. They don't want to start pumping money into Juniper Networks or something like that.
So they want markets just to look good.
Yeah.
The old chocolate-covered pile of shit.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. In a recent new update on housing, it seems that housing prices have been climbing 2 times the rate of wages over the last few years. We saw a new housing number come out today. I think the Case-Shiller came out. I think it was at 5.9% gain year over year in the 20-city Case-Shiller.
That's a lot.
And I'm noticing, this is totally anecdotal, but I'm noticing in the area that I live, people are pricing their houses at just numbers that you're thinking. As a matter of fact, when I was driving this morning to work, I saw a couple of people I knew in the neighborhood. They're renting. They're looking to buy a house. They want to live in this neighborhood. And I said, that's nice. They said, yeah, we're looking at a house down the block over here. It's on the water. Little house in the back of kind of a small, how many say, well, what are they asking? $1 million, which is, that level that everybody wants for their house, right? $1 million. Yeah. And the thing is that there's no way it's worth $1 million.
No.
But people are very excited about this. And I mean, what's happened in your area?
Well, we have the same thing going on, only it's the technique for selling these houses is completely the opposite. And if you talk to any real, and I go to all these, there's a lot of houses around here for sale. I always go in and snoop around. And they say, what's the asking price? I'll say $600,000. And I'll say, that's kind of low. She says, well, we expect it to go for 1.5. And I said, why don't you price it at 1.5? So no, you can't do that. Nobody does that around here. You price it as low as you can stomach, and then you sell it for 1.5. You let the, because then there's a frenzy.
Oh, and then they can
frenzy
start
of activity, people bidding it up. Oh, they're going to buy it. Oh, we got to put in more money. Oh, they're going to buy it. They're going to buy it. And they make an auction out of everything, and it goes up to 1.5, and that's what they do.
Hmm. And they start a bidding war, and everybody's all excited. It heats everything up.
Yeah.
Gets everybody up in a lather.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what's going on here. This is, prices are just absurd.
Well, I'll say this. Where were these same people that are bidding up a $800,000 house for 1.5 two or three years ago when you had the prices were down to 500, or six?
No, it's like they only attack when things are heating up to a point that they're, FOMO. That I think that is one of the best acronyms. That's an acronym, I guess. Fear of missing out. This terrible angst about not being able to get something that you want.
Yeah.
I think it's probably describes so much of what's going on in markets, in life. I think we could do a whole show on it, but we won't. Let's move on.
It'd be a good special show to sell.
Yeah, FOMO. DH Unplugged FOMO. In a side beat news item here, I was thinking about how this plays out because there was a recent ruling in Australia that the Australian government will not allow pedophiles to get passports. So I was thinking that's good. I mean, it seems, I guess, and sex offenders.
Not if you want to get rid of them.
But that's what I was thinking. So does that mean that in Australia, there's going to be an unusually high number of sex offenders in the country?
That's what it sounds like.
So they can't get out. They can't get out.
I think they'd encourage them to get out.
But they can't get out. How can they get out if they can't get a passport?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's dumb. Unless they really want them there.
Australia, the home of the pedophiles?
Yeah.
I don't know. They take the down under too seriously up there, huh?
Whoa.
That was not planned. But no, I think these are the kind of things you got to wonder what governments are doing in terms of the decision making in all these areas. It's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is, it's the age of nuttiness. That's the way I see it.
It is. All right. Now we have to go to Bitcoin because we've been talking about it. So let's talk about Bitcoin for a moment. Now, by the way, all of these things that we're talking about and the charts that we're looking at are over on dhunplugged.com under the show notes for this show, episode number 363. Now, Bitcoin, we know that it topped like 2,700. I think it moved up to close to 2,800 on one of the Bitcoin pricing services last week. And we were like, what's going on there? Then a couple of days later, plunged $600. Down 30% in a couple of days.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I've been fascinated with this whole Bitcoin thing because, you have the Bitcoin. There's a bunch of these Bitcoin followers that are like the Apple fanboys, the gold bugs. Everybody has names. I don't know if these guys have a name. Bitcoin buddies. I don't know, something.
Yeah, they need a name.
They need a name, right? They definitely need a name. So, but I was thinking, there's no real way to get in on this on the short side because we know that there's this whole problem with the SEC not allowing the true Bitcoin ETF. But then I started looking and there is actually something on the markets.
Okay.
The symbol is GBTC, which I guess stands for maybe Global Bitcoin Tracking Currency or something. I don't know what it stands for, actually. I just made that up. But anyway, GBTC is actually traded.
Okay.
Now, it's a little thinly traded, but it's traded. And I started looking into this to find out what the story is with this. And it's very convoluted. It has this Ethereum. They have another one for Bitcoin, this company. They have one for Ethereum, which is another type
competitor.
A cryptocurrency and all this.
Yeah.
And so I started looking at this, and here's something fascinating I found out. So you have to look at this chart that, or the chart and the table that's going to be here. And I want to go through this with you because this is kind of cool. So if you look at this piece that I took right from the website of the company that promotes and has this Bitcoin offering or this Bitcoin investment.
Yeah.
And there's a very in-depth discussion of how they calculate what they calculate. And I started looking at this and I'm like, all right, what am I looking at? What exactly am I looking at here? Okay. So, so I'm looking at this two lines here. If you notice the dark purple, I guess it is, and then the cyan line. And I'm like, well, what the hell are they talking about here? The market price per share, which clearly is the market price per share of this GBTC investment. And I'm like, what is this other line? What is this other thing going on here? And it goes way back also. And it seems to me, from everything that I've read here, it's the amount of Bitcoin valuation per share of this. I don't know why it goes back longer, by the way.
But, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
But I read about this, and there is a major disconnect in this particular holding of the value, or the NAV value holding of how much, if you can see it, it tracked pretty well for a while. But now what's happening is that there's this major separation, and it seems that everybody started investing as this as a marketable investment that was easy to deal with and drove the price up close to what, 60, 70% higher?
Than it should be.
Than it should be. So that means that the underlying valuation of really what this particular fund is holding is only 220, which is about the price of Bitcoins, right? That's the valuation of Bitcoin, about times 10?
Yeah. 2,200? 2,200. Times 5?
What's times 5? Well, no, I'm saying the
would
purple
they go
one.
Up to 2,000?
The purple one. The purple one's at 220.
Yeah, no, I mean, what's the price of Bitcoin?
2,200? It was 2,800 last week.
Oh, I thought it was, well, I don't know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so it's 20.
Okay, yeah, you
so
got it right.
Maybe that's times 10, it's a divisor.
Yeah, 10x minimum.
So this thing is like, you know, worth, I don't know, 60, 70% higher than, or even more than that, of what it should be. And I just wonder if this is a possible short opportunity here.
How?
You short this particular fund.
You want to short the fund? Is it shortable?
Yes, it is.
I think it was.
I believe so. I believe it is. It's currently traded.
Okay.
And I got some people that when I was doing the research, I saw some things.
You said it was thin. It seems if it's thin, it's not going to have a lot of opportunity to short.
That's correct. And that's probably why it drove up so high. It went from, you know, 200 to 500 in just this month. Mm. I mean, it went up 100% this month. Bitcoin went up, you know, almost whatever it was. But it's just so out of market now. It's just so out of whack. Anyway, just something to think about.
Okay, well, you put it on the list.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. GBTC, we'll put that on the list. If anybody knows anything more about that, I did some research on it. I couldn't find anything that was differing from what I'm telling you now, so we'll see. Now, last week we talked about, we wondered, we questioned, we were curious about this whole nomenclature of why something's called a tax return. You know, when you file your tax return and then you get your tax return, right? We were confused about this.
Yeah. You were wringing your hands over the nomenclature.
Yeah. And I couldn't sleep all week over this. Okay. Fortunately, to the rescue, one of our listeners, John Steck, did some digging in and came up with this. I'll tell you what he said. The term evolved from the legal usage of return. Term evolved from the legal. When an official is served with a writ of habeas corpus demanding the release of an individual who has been held in custody without just cause, and the official responds to the writ showing that just cause for which the individual is being held, the documentary response is called a return of the writ. And similarly, the provisions of the Internal Revenue Code impose a tax liability on U.S. persons, and the return is the means by which U.S. persons provide their legal response that documents their actual tax liability. In this context, return is taken as the meaning of legal report. Another example of similar usage in the term return applies to elections when the official report counts are called election returns. Does that help? Huh. So there
interesting.
You go. Yep. There you go. Thank you, John Steck. So I still think they should change it. It's still
all
confusing.
That work.
All that work, John. It's give me a reason why we can't petition to return the word return. It would seem we should have a tax filing and a tax return.
I think it's a tax statement.
Yeah. Tax statement. I filed my tax statement.
Yeah, I filed my tax statement.
Yeah.
I filed my tax return. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it better. I like statement better or anything. Yeah. You're right. I think you're right. I'm not going to obsess on it like you do, but I think you are right.
Well, at least I'll get some sleep this week. But then I have another story coming up here that's definitely going to keep me up not only nights. This could be like months at a time right now. This is so troubling. I don't even know where to begin now. I know also in my first 20 minutes of my workout today, I did catch the No Agenda show, great show with Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak on Thursdays and Sundays each and every week, where you find out more information than you know what to do with. And good information, that is. It shows the world how it really is versus how it's being presented. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I think it's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, okay. But you talked about this too, and it bothered me a lot. I had this on the list of things to talk about, and I said, okay, listen, we're going to get into this. It's this whole UBI. UBI. I don't know if anybody's calling it UBI yet, but it's going to be called UBI, which is the recent commencement speech of Zuckerberg to getting his honorary diploma, where he was talking about universal basic income.
Right. This has been discussed over the years. I already know how you feel about it.
Oh, I'm so troubled.
But this was first introduced into the mainstream public thinking by Nixon.
Well, that was different. It's one thing for a politician to come with an asinine idea like this to try to win votes. I don't understand why Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, by the way, are all in this whole universal basic income. Explain to everybody what this is.
Well, the idea is that there's an income. They've played with this. They continue to play with this in Switzerland. This is the idea. And Nixon's version was a reverse income tax. And so everything was kind of like a zero sum thing. And there'd be a certain amount of money you would receive to live without, you know, dying in the streets and being a health problem for the public at large. You'd get a certain amount of money, and then you could earn more. And once you get to a point where you're earning like a lot, then you'd have to start paying taxes. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, but this is saying that everybody should get some stipend from the government. It's kind of like living in Qatar, where if you were born in Qatar, you're pretty much set. You get your house, get your
Kuwait, same thing.
Yeah. So they're talking about this somehow, which leads us to believe that somehow, for example, in Qatar and in Kuwait, what's happening is that they own the land that all this oil is coming up from. And basically the government is sharing in the wealth of the natural resource. What particular natural resource do we have here that is not privatized that the government is somehow going to magically provide this universal basic income from? Is it going to be, do we have just naturally technology? No, it's not owned by the government. The only thing our government owns is the potential for the outright taxation of its people, which is based on their incomes, which is based on private enterprise. So how is the government, which I'm assuming that's what Zuckerberg and Elon Musk are talking about, how are they going to, and by the way, coming from them is even more, I would say, distasteful. Everybody should get basic income. Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys. And by the way, they could pay for it.
Well, that would be my approach. I think a wealth tax instead of an income tax, because an income tax is counterproductive to achieving any sort of wealth because you're being taxed for work. You shouldn't be taxed for work. You should be taxed for your accumulation above and beyond what normal people accumulate. And then you could redistribute that down to the people that have no money or jobs, and they won't have jobs. And Musk feels real guilty about the fact that he's actually keeping people from getting jobs with his machines.
Right, because he says that automation will force UBI.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. So from what I found on the interweb, I have a basic definition. It's called they also call it a basic income, also an income guarantee or citizen's income, unconditional basic income, universal basic income, or universal. This one I loved. I love this one. A universal demogrant.
Huh.
Which if you split that up, demo, which I'm assuming means democracy, and grant, it's a grant from the democracy. So people
think the demo meant demographic.
Demographic? Well, universal demographic. Okay. So demographic grant. In the form of Social Security, in which all citizens or residents of a country receive regular payments, unconditional sums of money, either from a government or some other public institution, in addition to any income received from elsewhere. Now, that's what we have on Social Security. However, Social Security is money that you put away early and throughout your lifetime in order to and let the government do what they do with it so that you guarantee yourself back a retirement income. So this is not that.
Social Security ideally is forced savings.
Right. Now, is this communistic? Is this socialistic?
Well, this is a question that according to you it is.
According to me, I'm asking you.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I think it is. It has to be. I mean, it's not as if. I just do this. I'll take the side of the argument because that's what you're looking for.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as if every idea that came from a socialist or a communist, that every idea per se sucks.
Mm-hmm.
There's good ideas in every theoretical political structure. I mean, there's smart things the Democrats have done and smart things the Republicans have done and dumb things they both have done.
Yeah, there's enough dumb to spread out is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But there's some good. Just because something's called communist or something's called socialist doesn't necessarily slam the brakes on it and say it's a bad idea.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
All right, well, back to this for a second. Why are all the Silicon Valley elites so hot on this whole thing?
That is a mystery to me, too. I can't take a position. They've all turned Democrat, not all of them, but I mean most of them. The Republicans don't speak up anymore. And I don't know what the deal is. It's beyond me. I think it's globalism. I have no clue as to why Silicon Valley has gone so nutty.
Well, let's put it this way. First of all, I think it also will stifle, it has the potential to stifle entrepreneurship. And it is the current and most recent version of trophies for all. This is what this is. The Silicon Valley, this is what it is. I mean, think about it. Right? Am I right?
Participation trophies.
It's a participation trophy for all, which we all knew that as we saw it happening with our kids, that this is not going to turn out well.
I don't believe for a minute that the Silicon Valley folks are so evil in their intentions that this is what they're thinking.
No, but you know what they are? They want people to get basic income so somehow they could funnel it back to these guys. I'm telling you, Elon Musk wants it because you can buy cars with it. Zuckerberg wants it because then you'll buy advertising and you'll have more money for Facebook. That's what this is all about. All the Silicon Valley guys know that, you know what? If technology is so hot, everybody needs phones and they want apps and they want to do all this stuff, that why not just give people money? I mean, do you really think that Zuckerberg's...
So you're thinking the following.
Yeah.
I'm at Apple and I'm thinking, just give people money because then they'll buy my iPhone.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I don't think that's so outlandish.
Well, they definitely have the right audience for people buying iPhones left and right if they're going to go in that direction. But I just don't see it. I think there's actually a number of people in this position that aren't cynical and they're actual do-gooders.
Hmm. That's obviously not me.
No, you're not. You're anything but that.
I'm cynical and a not do-gooder. So wait. I also believe that. I lost my train of thought here on this. Oh, so all right. Well, let me just maybe say it for the record. I'm not for this.
Yeah.
Now. By the way,
that's going out on a limb.
Yeah.
I think I prefaced this whole segment by saying that that's where you're going to head.
I don't think that anybody should go without of basic necessities and things like that. I'm not talking about Social Security. I'm not talking about welfare. I'm not talking about any of that. But I think the idea of giving people a basic guaranteed income just because they're alive, and I think it really does prevent people from going and doing what they have to do in order to make it on their own. If you're just gonna carry around the bird all those years, just don't bother pushing them out of the nest, I guess, because they don't need to fly. You need people to fly. Get them wings.
For a couple of things. One, I think there's enough people flying. And a lot of these people are never going to get anywhere. They're never going to be entrepreneurial in a million years, but they need some help. And so, this sounds like a way to do it without getting too carried away with bureaucracies and having them sign up and stand in lines and demean themselves. So I'm all for it.
All right. How about this? I will be all for it if there is a guarantee that a portion of your paycheck that you get from this universal free income goes to a payment for a podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there you have it. Okay. Then we agree on one thing.
That we're good. Let me say it a different way. As long as I benefit, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the American way.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about Chipotle because this company just can't get a break.
Now, I have not caught this story. I don't know anything about this.
So there's a couple of private equity firms and a bunch of guys trying to take a position in the company to change the management because the management's a bunch of jerks. And the way they handled the whole outbreak of the E. coli and just all that. Anyway, so
Still not solved.
So now a cybersecurity attack hit almost every Chipotle restaurant, which allowed hackers to steal credit card information from customers. So now people don't want to go and possibly eat a E. coli burdened burrito. They should come out with that. The E. coli burrito. That would be great just to make it fun. But now people are going to be concerned about their financial, getting hacked. This was back in April. It was some kind of malware attack in the restaurant, and the restaurants were all affected. So
what happened? They couldn't sell the burritos, or what? What was the?
They stole credit card information.
This Chipotle story is just, and the stock price and everything in between is just beyond my comprehension.
You have to wonder if some of these things. If you ever watch the show
Billions,
and you see how some of this stuff is played, which obviously is, I hope, theatrics, okay? And it's not based on anything real, some of the stuff. You got to wonder if there's somebody out there really looking to trip up this company for some reason for financial gain. Because...
Well, opportunity's knocking.
Yeah, it is. You got the E. coli thing, it's sprinkled a little bit in the burritos and people get sick. Now, moving along to advertising, I got a few things that are really getting me in the gut. So there's something called AI enhanced advertising. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
AI, artificial intelligence enhanced advertising.
This is another one of those gimmicks that these companies come up with to try to sell advertising at a too high a price per thousand.
So I was wondering, though, is it all about trying to, is the pitch all about trying to get the advertisers to believe that somehow that they can get in front of the people utilizing what they want to see somehow from some kind of browsing experience and cookies? Or is it even so far as going on a limb and saying it's the modern form of the subliminal advertising that was done to get people to buy popcorn in the movie theaters in the 50s?
No. This is the first thing you said, not the second.
So it's the first thing, which is trying to get to convince advertisers that somehow their way of getting in front of you with that ad is optimized in such a way that will make people want to buy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
Mm. And is that ethical? I don't know.
Well, that one is. The other one's not.
Well, if somehow they get into the cookies and privacy issues, I mean, I guess you automatically have to sign the agree to the privacy policy when you go on a website, right? So
technically,
I guess nobody cares. That's the fact.
Ah, bingo.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. That goes pretty much everything we talked about from the beginning of the show to now is does anybody care is really could be, you just put that on the end. Does anybody care? No.
Nobody seems to care.
Yeah. What about this? Wells Fargo may have to spend over $142 million to settle additional class action lawsuits in connection with its unauthorized account scandal. And a federal judge in San Fran said late Wednesday that it would approve a settlement deal reached by the bank and the plaintiff's attorneys, but only if it agrees to several conditions, one which is that it guarantees that all customers will be fully compensated for their losses. I still am wondering, what is the loss that can happen? Did you get hit by $3 a month of on a fraudulent account?
Well, there were these fees that got snuck into your bill.
But if it was a fraudulent account, did it have to be under your name? Or was it just this bogus account that was set up?
I have no idea. All I know is that some people lost money somehow.
$142 million. Doesn't seem like a lot of money to try to make. Although it really, the whole scam was not about trying to make money. It was trying to make it look like they were opening up all these accounts and they had all these new customers coming in so that it buoyed their stock.
Yes, I think this should be a... I think the people that should be irked would be the shareholders.
Yeah. Let's talk about the oceans for a second, since we're covering all areas of things that are concerning, you know. A membrane made from, you ever hear this graphene oxide?
I know about graphene.
Graphene seems like one of those things in life that was like a wonder something or other, but never worked.
It works.
I'm off on that, right?
I hope.
Graphene oxide can be used to sieve water, salt water, out of seawater and make it safe to drink.
I haven't heard this.
Yeah. A little membrane, a little kind of pouch thing. It's kind of like a Brita on steroids, where you can put it in there.
To be able to suck salt out of seawater through a membrane.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see, if you imagine like a bag, the membrane was a bag, and you put the seawater in there, you just squeeze it, and out comes fresh water and a bunch of salt lays behind. Be great.
It's not only the salt in the salt water that's a problem, is it? Because drinking salt water is not good. If you're out in the ocean, you're stranded, marooned in the sea, and you're not supposed to drink the salt water.
Right.
So couldn't you just simply, let's say, put a bowl of salt water out and then let the hot water hit, and the salt should sink to the bottom and just lap up the top level layer?
It's dissolved.
Mm. So you got to undissolve. So somehow this is so fine that it takes out, I'm assuming, the dirt and any kind of soot and salt. We got to get our hands on that.
That's what it sounds like. But the salt, since it's not like in suspension, it's not like an emulsion. It is dissolved in the water. And to get it out at a molecular level has got to take some very special device. I'm not sure how they would do it.
You would think they would come up with something like this for boats and ships. You know, that you could put into your ditch bag.
Yeah, no, it'd be great if you could come up with something that worked.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why desalinization, so it's such an expensive process. I mean, ships have the systems, but they're all evaporative. They boil the water and stuff falls by the wayside, and then you condense the water. You got a nice, tasty, fresh water.
Mm-hmm. Before we get on to some other important items, such as the close to the pin and Twitter donations, just mention that subprime auto loans are continuing to sour.
Ooh.
We have less borrowers are paying additional payments. So for a while, what was happening, even with subprime, that borrowers saying, this is kind of expensive, this whole deal. So they would pay extra payments to bring down the total bill.
Right.
And lately, it appears that... for whatever reason, that's not happening. They're slowing up their extra payments, and delinquencies are on the rise.
Huh. That's not a good thing.
Nope. So we know there's a big problem with subprime loans. There's no question about that. But let's see here.
Mm-hmm. You get a lot of good used cars on the market.
Yep, there will be. If you want to follow John C. Dvorak, it's The Real Dvorak on Twitter. And I'm Andrew Horowitz, one word. On that too. Thank you everybody for the donations last week. We got a couple in there, and I got some strange numbers. You caused that to happen somehow with your crazy stuff you do with your newsletters and No Agenda.
Maybe we do have a lot of numerological stuff. It turns out to be people like to contribute some favorite number or some birth date or whatever. It's very, we noticed that years ago and it's always fascinated me.
Well, we got like from, somebody sent in like $17.39 or something like that. I don't even know what that means. But if you want to donate, there's a very easy way to do it. And we appreciate anything that you could do because it keeps the show going. And of course, us eating. And this is our way of getting basic income on a universal basis. You go over to the website, DH Unplugged. We encourage you highly, if you're listening right now, we highly encourage you to go over and to push that little button. Because actually what happens when you push that button, we coded this in such a way that when, there's actually a pulse that will actually warm your entire arm. It's a fascinating feeling. It warms your entire arm and it makes your heart beat in such a way that you get this it's almost euphoric. You've tried it, John. It's like euphoria. When you don't,
like it's like the orgasm ball in the Woody Allen movie Sleeper.
The orgasmatron. Yeah, exactly.
The orb.
That's what it was. But if you don't believe us, you should try it. You're saying, yeah, we're kidding. We're not kidding. Go over and push that donate button. You'll see how good it feels. All right. Mentioning the closest to the pin contest. Currently, we're working on the VIX, which we have plenty of people that are joining. You can check that out and find out where you are. It updates live. Who is closest to the actual number? We'll close this week. And if you haven't gotten your actual price guess in yet for Bitcoin, which is all over the place.
Yeah, this one's a crapshoot.
you can do that. I don't know if I got an actual number from you yet. I have to look at that. But it will close the end of this week, and then we'll have, of course, a one-of-a-kind DH Unplugged Close to the Pin contest certificate, as well as a T-shirt for the winner. And you'll be in on the annual CTP Cup, which we'll have at the end of the year. All right, let's move on. By the way, if you noticed, I got through the entire first half of the show, no politics. Was that at all evident?
Not to me. I think politics is boring.
Okay. Well, he's got some people, why are you guys always dissing on Trump? I'm like, we're not dissing on Trump. We're just talking about what's going on in the markets and in politics. So we're not dissing on it. But it seems lately that bloggers and media are focusing on, they're getting stranger and stranger. Now they're focusing on the time of the handshake for Trump, Macron, and Putin. Have you seen this?
People in these handshakes is just getting on my nerves.
Oh, he was holding on for 5 seconds. Look how close he moved in. Oh, he put his hand on his lapel. He tried to pull away. I mean, the nuts.
They are nuts. It's completely nuts.
Oh, God. It's unbelievable. There's an outbreak of plagiarism going on. It seems a growing number of computer science students are getting caught plagiarizing code either from classmates or from somewhere on the web. What does this mean? Are they at the end of their effective ability to create?
They're plagiarizing code?
Yeah. Who does that?
Don't you share code anyways and get somebody who's got a good algorithm, you use it?
But I guess it's in college is that you're not supposed to plagiarize. And college is different.
I mean, you're not supposed to plagiarize anywhere.
Well, obviously.
It's not that he's writing a novel where they're plagiarizing stories or dialogue. They're just plagiarizing some code.
It seems that way. It's in college and people are getting caught plagiarizing. I mean, it's one thing if you need to get some scripting language code.
By the way, with JavaScript, it's kind of built to be plagiarized. You generally speaking, you go to these libraries that have all this JavaScript subroutines and routines and that does all the stuff, and you grab this, you grab that, you grab this, you grab that. You put it together like a jigsaw puzzle and boom, you got yourself a business.
Yeah. Let me just tell you, it's also called GitHub. Hello. It's open source where you can grab the stuff. They tell you pretty much how to do it. And you said, use this and then make that. And then if you want to tweak it, you want to change it. If you want to make a chart of some sort or a dial that does something or a clock or a countdown thing, here's the code. Just do what you want with it and, you know, put it back on if you want so other people can share.
This sounds very interesting to me that this is being considered plagiarism.
I don't know what they're plagiarizing.
But I'm going to have to look into this story now. You got me. Please. You got my interest piqued.
Piquing the interest. Well, on that note, Manuel, I love when they call, Manuel Noriega. You know what they always called him, right? Panama strongman, the strongman. Why do they always call him the strong man?
Because he was a strong man.
Is that why?
He lift a lot.
Come on. You know, Manuel Noriega, who we, you know, the Panamanian dude that was the very rough and tumbled kind of drug lord, I guess, and bad guy and just whatever. He died at the age of 83. I think he was in prison here somewhere. We got him in a prison.
Yeah, I think he was in a Supermax somewhere. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. There's been some more airplane
drama. They threw the keys away with that
guy. Oh, they did. Yeah, they did. But the Manuel Noriega. More airplane drama. Seems that flight number 5242 out of Charlotte on last Thursday, was pulling away from the gate, and this guy went Looney Tune. This guy, Tun Lan Sen, he's 22 years old. He got out of his seat, and he tried to force the main cabin door open. And then flight attendant and two passengers got up to stop him. And the crew passengers tried to restrain him, and then he tried to bite them. And I think he went, and then he opened up another door, and he jumped off the plane.
No, is that easy to jump off a plane?
It's very high up.
My understanding was that those doors don't just pop open when you pull a lever.
Yeah, something's weird. But I think my best guess here is that this whole airplane garbage is going to die down a slow death, and then we're not going to hear about stuff for a long time.
You might be right.
Just got this popular.
This story you just described is one of the weirder ones.
Yeah. This is also weird. A Muslim man is suing Little Caesars for $100 million after he says he was served and then accidentally ate pepperoni made with pork, which is a food prohibited by Islamic law. The complaint says that...
What do you think pepperoni is made from?
Yeah, pepperoni is made from green peppers. It says peppers. Is it green peppers?
Yeah, made from pork. It's a pork sausage.
Right. The complaint says that Mohammed Bazi of Dearborn ordered halal pizza twice from the shop in Schaefer in Dearborn. The box was labeled halal, but the pies inside were topped with regular pepperoni. Now, I don't know about you, but first of all, how do you know the difference? Do you have to take it to like some kind of molecular biologist to find out what it's made with? Because if he's eating something that was supposed to be halal, that was pepperoni, but it was halal pepperoni, like it was made with meat and flavored like pepperoni, how do you know the difference? And what made him figure out
that? I'm assuming that you could probably make a pepperoni taste alike out of beef.
Yeah.
And that could be halal.
Yeah.
Or goat.
Yeah. Well, whatever is halal, you can make a pepperoni. Somehow.
So this is just a nuisance suit. They'll probably get him, give him 50 grand and he'll go away.
$100 million. But then he's going to hell. But if you eat something that don't know that you're eating something and it's not your fault and you don't voluntarily eat it, is it a bad thing?
I don't know the rules.
Mm.
It irked him, apparently.
My grandfather was kosher, and I saw him one time eating a beef Wellington, which is a beef and it's topped with like a cream sauce. And I didn't say anything.
Right, you can't mix – well, beef Wellington – Isn't beef Wellington a beef encrusted in dough?
Yeah, but then they put like sometimes a cream sauce on top. When they cut it and put it on a plate, they put it with a cream sauce on it.
Oh, you sure it's not a horseradish sauce?
I don't think so. It looked like a cream sauce to me. I didn't say a thing because I didn't want my grandfather to feel bad. He was really enjoying it.
Yeah, okay. Well, then you just, what he doesn't know won't hurt him.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I mean, technically should kill him.
Yeah, but, and by the way, looking back on this, I could have been a rich man. he could have sued.
Was it a kosher beef Wellington?
I don't think so.
Is that what he ordered?
It was a beef Wellington, but we were not in a kosher restaurant.
If you're not in a kosher restaurant, I wouldn't expect to get a lot of kosher food or halal for that matter, which is pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. I agree. It has to do with the slaughtering process.
Yeah.
So they hang it upside down. Kosher meats, they hang upside down. You know how this works?
I don't know all the details.
You do?
I don't know.
They kill it in a very humane. Let's put it this way: that in New York, they have the butcher houses that basically club an animal to death. That's not considered humane. What they do is they hang the various animals up from their legs and they bring all the blood down to the neck and just slit its throat and it's done. I don't think killing the animal is humane in any degree per se, but I guess it's ways that don't make it know that it's being killed. But then again, animals don't speak, so you don't know if they're being hurt anyway. So what's the difference?
Yeah, you just have to make assumptions.
Yeah. Greece, real quickly. Greece is has failed to secure a deal to unlock the next installment of his multi-billion dollar bailout after talks with the Eurozone finance ministers broke down. Now they're threatening default again.
What does this mean?
Nah, back to, let's go back up. Let's read up a little bit. Ready? Who cares? Does anyone care?
That's our theme today.
Yeah, does anyone care? Here's a quick hot dog PSA for you, just to let everybody know, for those of you that are very interested. More than 200,000 pounds of hot dogs, including Nathan's, are being pulled from store shelves after metal shards were found in some of the packages. So does that mean that whoever's making the hot dog is making it for all sorts of different name brands? So
it sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't that? You just don't happen to get hot dogs at all sorts of, in all sorts of places by accident at the same time.
No, that means it's someone operation, which is, you know, that hot dog, to make that kind of gruel-like meat soup that is the middle of the hot dog. It's a very fine grind, and so I can see where some of these grinders could like break or something and produce a metal iron filings into the meat.
So it says the U.S. Department of Agriculture said three separate complaints came in about small metal scraps in a batch of hot dogs manufactured by Cincinnati-based John Morrell and Company on January 26 for the Nathan's and Curtis brands. Well, now that I'm reading this again, now I'm pissed off. Because obviously you're not, it's once again all about the money. They outsourced the whole damn process, didn't they?
Well, it sounds like.
Ech, I'm done with that.
Morrell's probably can do it cheaper than Nathan's can themselves. And so they say, okay, you guys do it.
Yeah, not buying.
How's it still kosher is beyond me, but okay.
Well, it's not kosher. I didn't say it was a kosher dog because that's a Hebrew national.
I think that, isn't Nathan's a kosher dog?
Definitely not. It could be. They could have a kosher dog, but not that I'm aware of. It's usually Chauffeur, Hebrew National, and a couple others. And finally, before we get going, 2 points. Number one, what are you writing for PC Magazine this week?
That's another good question. What was it? It was about, I have to look up the title just to remember. It's astonishing how I do this, by the way.
It's more than astonishing.
That I can't remember what I'm doing.
And you just wrote it today, probably.
I did. I wrote it and I got it shipped about 1 o'clock. And then it immediately goes away. I mean, people who are professional writers would understand what I'm talking about. Let's see what we got here. I'll tell you in 1 second. It was, yes. So I wrote about the possibility, you know, these machines, the big deal happened like this last week, which is a computer beat the world's greatest Go player. Mm. And so I think that this is all bull crap. Who cares what these machines can do against humans? I mean, they should be able to beat them at these games because the games are mathematically modeled and computers should be able to do better. But I'd like to see some tournaments where computers play computers. So you'd have some with big stakes. I mean, I'd be interested in seeing the best, you know, some guy's best idea for a chess playing computer playing another one, and the winner takes $1 million.
So what you're saying is that it's not fair for a competition for bench pressing between a human and a hydraulic lift.
That's what I'm saying.
Right? You think you should have two hydraulic lifts next to each other, and whoever can win that competition, that's a reasonable competition.
Yes, to me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I didn't use that as an example. I use computers playing computers, especially bridge. They can play bridge. They can play Go. They can play. But chess would be a good test. And everyone, even if they stalemate 90% of the time, let's see which computer can win. Two out of three.
I like it. We can't end this before we talk about the stocks in a moment. But also, just to mention, Tiger Woods, the former number one golf player in the world, was arrested early Monday. Did you see the story? You must have seen the story.
Yeah, it made it sound like he was drunk.
It wasn't drunk. He was sleeping at the wheel on the side of the road at 3 a.m. and he had slurred speech and he failed a police instructed roadside test. He had no alcohol or blew a zero, supposedly. And he said that it was due to some drugs. It was an unexpected reaction to prescription medications.
Yeah, which happens all the time.
Why was he on the road at 3 a.m.?
he probably was on the road at 9 p.m. and fell asleep at the wheel and conked out.
Oh, okay. That I'll go with. Okay. That seems a little unlikely that a cop didn't get him before that, but okay. And he was taken to jail. His mugshot was up there. And
yeah, I think it was ridiculous.
Pretty ugly. All right, let's get over to the stocks. This is a game that we play. It's not an offer to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any sort, of any kind, in any level at all. But it's just a simple game that we play, and we come up with ideas each and every week. John T. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients, may be owners of these, and we will duly note those in the disclosures. You can also follow this over on DH Unplugged, which is the important part here, that DH Unplugged has a list of the current open and closed positions, the gains, losses, and that updates throughout the day live as the markets are open. And you can follow along and hopefully check out what's going on there. We did see we're going to add, what do we say? We're going to add something. GBTC. Are you in on the GBTC?
No, okay. Never.
I'm going to wait another week. I'm going to have to do a little more research.
Okay.
So why don't you take a look at the stocks and rattle off what's going on?
Well, we have our over-year Barclays is still hanging in there, 46% gain. More recently, of course, the STRP, Straight Path Communications, had short, which was a very wild pick, is doing very well, 23% in very little time, 5/10. He did it like May 10th. Snap is down. Revlon, my pick, is down, even though all these insights. It's way down. It's way too down. It got kicked off.
Those get kicked off.
So did your Snap.
That was our Snap.
And the new picks that were put on are both up. Drexion shares, your traded fund trust. Forgot what you put 15% on. And my Pentair PLC, which is an insider thing, is up a bit. It's kind of dead money, but it's up a bit. CXS, the train company, which I just bought a couple of, like the third, is up.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. And what else? There's nothing else. Wells Fargo didn't do anything. It was a dead money call. And I don't see it. Campbell Soup is up.
Good on that one.
Yeah, well.
Your Gilead short is doing well? Other than that,
it looks pretty decent. I mean, it's mostly green, but there's a number of red ones. Get kicked off soon.
What do you have? I'm gonna hold off till next week on the Bitcoin one. We got that crazy one, the Brazilian triple in there, so that's kind of playing out. And there's enough names on here right now to keep us going. So what do you have?
Well, I was looking at Advanced Auto Parts. Looks like a possible rebound. Insider buying there. The PRA Group Business Service. I don't know anything about them, and I don't like to look at the chart. Kinder Morgan though seems to be hitting a bottom. And Richard Kinder, who I assume is one of the principals of the company because it refers to the name Kinder Morgan, is Kinder. It's him. He's bought $10 million worth of his stock. I don't know if he's trying to prop it up or anything, but I just think it's worth probably keeping an eye on the company. And the thing is, all he does is buy it. I'll give you an example. He bought it at 32.
KMP is a symbol, right?
He bought $3 million. Within 32, he bought $6 million. Within 32, he bought a bunch. 39, he bought a bunch. 39, 39, 34, 24, 18. He just keeps buying it. So I don't know if this guy's really a player or he's just buying. But 18.58 may be a good place to buy.
What's the symbol on this? Not Kinder Morgan Energy Partners, is it? KMP?
No, it's KMI. This is the pipeline company.
Ah, KMI. I always get confused between the two of those.
Yeah, sounds like the same company.
Trading at about $18.42 here.
Yeah, I'll throw in.
Okay, you're in on that one. Locked in and loaded. Okay, we got that inside of buying. Any others?
No, we got nothing.
Nothing else. All right, well, make sure everybody you to know that if you're listening to this, if you made it through, if you didn't fall asleep like Curry does each and every week, you can listen to
sleeping as we speak.
Probably. He's so busy with that podcaster pro. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, his little device.
Hold on a second. I looked at the Indiegogo thing that he's got running, right?
Yeah.
And I see that all these people have like the this one signed one for that price and the special edition with this guy's name. Where are you?
Me?
Yeah. You don't have a special signed edition John C. Dvorak Podcaster Pro that you're selling?
I didn't think of doing something like that.
But he's got
it's Adam's device. He should sign it himself.
Yeah, but he's got that plus a lot of other people.
signed edition.
Yeah, signed edition.
I'll talk to him about it.
Yeah, you got to put a signed edition.
Yeah, he has a certain kind of, I'd say, a disdain for a lot of these gimmicks.
Well, he's not disdaining this one.
Well, does he have a signed edition? I haven't looked at that webpage.
He's got like five of them.
Does he?
I'm telling you. Hang on a second. I'm going to pull it up. Just bear with me for 1 second. It's cancel. It's Indiegogo, I think it's called. Indie. If I can find it. Indiegogo. Adam Curry. Let's see. Curry. Enter.
I thought he was going to do Kickstarter.
It looks like it's Indiegogo Adam Curry. Let's see.
I've been misled.
Podcaster Pro. Here it is. He's raised a bunch of money already. It's coming up in a second here. And he's got, I'm going down the list. All right, the Adam Curry Signature Edition, $647. Okay? I'm going down the list. Hang on. The John Lee Dumas Signature Edition. The Podcast Movement Signature Edition. The Todd Cochran Signature Edition. The Dan Benjamin Signature Edition. The Mike Koenig's Signature Edition, the Brian Bushwood. Then you got the Adam Curry Signature First.
Oh, he's gotten just the opposite of what I anticipated.
Unit hand built by Adam. A 3-pack Podcaster Pro.
Well, that would be called a prototype.
Yeah. First Run Podcaster Pro. That's December. It's going to be available.
Okay. Well, I think it's a big deal. It's really a professional piece of gear.
I love this. If you haven't checked it out, make sure to go over to just look up Indiegogo, Adam Curry. Just look for Podcaster Pro. It's a great device if you look at a podcast or even record or even do anything that is related to audio where you can actually plug in. It does a lot of sound metering for you and background noise reduction in a really cool way. They put a lot of time into this. I got to tell you something. It's very simple. Very simple little device, which is nice. So you can check that out over at, I guess it's called the Podcaster Pro. It's got preamps, EQ, compression, noise gate, mix minus, voice processing, and a single USB device about the size of a hardcover book. That's what it says on this thing here, at least. Cool. Anyway, didn't mean to really necessarily plug in, but I thought it was interesting that I was just looking at it. So
yeah, cool.
Anyway, all right. Talk to you next week, sir.
All right.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye bye.
Now I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.